This is According to Jim with Jim Joyner, McPherson's sports talk show.
Bullpups win! Bullpups win! Bullpups win it!
Listen every day, Monday through Friday, from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 96.7 FM KBBE or online at midkansasonline.com. According to Jim is your source for Chiefs talk.
10-5, touchdown, Kansas City, a 106-yard kickoff return right out of the gate.
The Royals.
Swinging a ground ball to third is fair. Fair ball up the left field line. Here's Cologne, and the Royals win it.
College football and college basketball.
Eight to shoot, Paul, the runner. Loose ball, it's good! The slipper still fits!
And everything else that's going on in the sports world.
Inside corner, the Royals, 2015 World Champions!
Now it's time for According to Jim. Here's your host, Jim Joyner.
Let's do this thing, According to Jim on 96.7 FM, KBBE, or online at midkansasonline.com. And of course, if you miss any of these shows, or if you just miss it today, you get caught up halfway through, find us on podcast, soundcloud.com/KBBE Sports. I'm Jim Joyner, Steve Sell joining me as always, the most popular man in McPherson. Steve, it was Halloween last night, and before we talk about all the big sports headlines from last night, and there were a lot of things happening, I want to give a little story.
Okay.
So, my whole life, leading up to adulthood, adults have always said, you know, you're going to get disappointed when you become an adult. You're going to be very disappointed. There are going to be some things that really change the way that you think about everything. And last night was one of those nights.
You didn't get any candy?
So, I am having my first Halloween and the first chance at trick-or-treaters on my own as an adult. And I'm so excited about it. You heard me talking about it yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
I got to go get some candy. I got to make sure I'm back in time. So I left here about 4:15 yesterday, stopped by the store, picked up a couple of bags of candy, and I had to make sure that I went out and ran before 5 o'clock. So that way I would make sure I'd get back in time, sit down, because nobody's going to come trick-or-treat before 5 o'clock. And I'm so excited. I went and put on my Priest Holmes jersey. And so that way when the kids see it, I go, you don't even know who Priest Holmes is, you little kid. He was the best. And I was so excited. This was going to be the moment I've been waiting for, to give these kids their candy, be an adult, finally. So I'm sitting there. It's about 5:15, 5:30. No kids, not yet. Okay, it's still kind of cold. Still daylight. Get 6 o'clock, start watching TV, and I'm starting to maybe prepare some dinner, and I'm waiting. 7 o'clock rolls around, baseball game's finally starting to start, and I'm getting upset. Where are these kids at? 7:30, 8 o'clock rolls around, still no knocks on the door, and I have a big bowl of the good stuff sitting right there by the door. We have Reese's.
Casey's didn't come by with her kids?
We have Hershey's, no.
Oh.
So we get to 8:30 and 9 o'clock, and I am furious. I have no trick-or-treaters at my door. And I have been waiting for this for, I don't know, my whole life. This was the moment that everybody was leading me to. And all I could think about was that I felt like the high school kid who was going to have a big party with his parents out of town and invited the whole school. I invited everybody. And nobody showed up. And I sat there and looked like a fool all night long. And I am just devastated.
Well,
Halloween
let me
is
tell you,
ruined
if,
for me.
If that's the least of your disappointments now that you're an adult, You've got a lot to look forward to because
I've got a lot of disappointment.
Yeah, you got a lot of disappointment.
This is just a bad.
Well,
start.
I'll just tell you, I've lived here 40 years, and I think I've had trick or treaters maybe 3 times. Now I didn't realize I live in an apartment complex and have a big light in the back lot. Well, apparently one of my people that live in my complex turned that light off, so it's pitch dark. So
they're ruining it for you.
Well, yeah, but hey, more candy for me.
Now I have a big
Kraft
bowl of candy.
Kraft Caramels.
Yeah, those
too.
Kraft Caramels. Yeah. Now, Steve did not have any Kit Kats yesterday.
Nah,
as
I
we learned, he doesn't
are.
Know what a Kit Kat
That's right.
is. I think I need to bring you a big bag of them tomorrow.
Well, so, I've got enough Kraft Caramels to last me a month.
So the holiday may as well be canceled for the rest of my life. I'm very disappointed in Halloween and all the trick-or-treaters. I'm just crushed. Well, Moving on to sports, there is so much to talk about from what happened last night. Number one, we have the best feeling in sports. Game 7 of the World Series coming up as the Dodgers beat the Astros last night by a score of 3-1. Bullpup Soccer picked up a massive win on the road in the state quarterfinals, and that means they're going back to my old stomping grounds, the College Boulevard Activity Center in Olathe. They have a semifinal matchup on Friday afternoon.
Did Coach Adrian ask you for any good eating places?
Well, I'm surprised he hasn't yet. Well, I mean, that's my neck of the woods, Steve.
Oh, I know.
Whenever I die, I want them to sprinkle my ashes at first base of the North baseball field at
I've already said for my ashes to be sprinkled on number 13 tee box at Turkey Creek, because I birdie that hole about every other time. So my golf guys, who I will outlive, I'm sure, they know that, you know, I own number 13. So sprinkle my ashes on number 13.
And for any of the sports fans and the soccer fans or the Bullpups that will be going to Olathe this week, it is a very nice facility now. Whenever I was playing there, everything was still grass. And now they have a massive tennis complex out there. The soccer field is an all-turf field. The football field is all-turf at the stadium. It's nice. I mean, this is a great place to host a state tournament.
Well, you know, the Bullpups, last year was supposed to be the year we went to the Final Four. This year, no expectations. It was a young team playing 7 and 8 sophomores at a time, and they make the Final Four. And then the only bad thing about it was we were figuring on playing Tonganoxie. Well, Tonganoxie gets upset by Spring Hill. Tonganoxie hadn't lost a game all year. So that means the Bullpups play Miege, which has, like, been in the state championship game, what, every year since they've had soccer, except maybe one. So, but, hey, like I've always said, soccer's a funny game. And if you scheme right, you pack everybody in, you keep Miege on the board, and then take a chance and maybe kick one in at the other end, you can win the game. So, you know, Miege is going to be the favorite. There's no doubt about it. But congratulations to the Bullpups on kind of getting over that hurdle. I think it's the first time in about 9 years they've been in the Final Four. I think it was when Aaron Frazier and those guys, that would have been around 2008, I want to say, played in the state championship. And that was in McPherson, if I recall. And I think they had to play somebody like Aquinas or Miege in the semifinals. So congratulations, Coach Adrian. I'm sure you know, they'll represent the town well. And again, with so many underclassmen, this might be an annual trip for a couple years.
I got to watch a state championship game at this same place that they will be playing over the weekend. It was my Olathe East Hawks in 2012. The spring of that year, the girls' team, which ran the table, was undefeated all year long. They won in overtime, 5-4 over Blue Valley West. We all stormed the field, but it was such a long run to get to the other end of the field, to the goal, that everybody was just tired. Nobody was screaming when they got down there. We'd all run for about 100 yards and got there and went, oh, all right, good game.
Yeah. But, the other problem is Bullpup football is home on Friday night for the game of the century, at least since we had Bishop Carroll here, and most of the McPherson fans will be here in town on Friday. So the Bullpups, other than the parents and girlfriends, may not have too many people up there. It is a 5 o'clock game up there. I don't know how long it takes to get to that field.
It'll be about 3 hours from here.
Yeah, 3 hours. So, you know, McPherson fans for the most part will be here because it's going to just be a massive football game here Friday night with Buehler.
Yeah, looking forward to it. And we'll talk a little bit more about that today. And, of course, tomorrow is our big Bullpup football preview day. And we'll also talk about it on Friday. We will be hyping that game up big time. And another big headline today, which was sort of the repercussions of what happened on Monday night in the football world, Brock Osweiler is now going to be the starting quarterback for the Denver Broncos for a second time after Broncos coach Vance Joseph has benched Trevor Siemian.
Well, my thought is I'd like to be Brock Osweiler.
Brock Lobster.
Because he played 7 good games in his career, parlayed that into a $72 million contract.
Not bad.
Now all he does is hold a clipboard, but now he's actually got to do a little work. He's bounced around and ended up back in Denver. He went down to Houston. I think he had a cup of coffee maybe in Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
Back with Denver. Man, as bad as Trevor Siemian was, you know that he's got to be bad for Brock Osweiler to be back at quarterback. But the Broncos will always be in the game because I think they have the NFL's best defense. I'm not sure statistically if they're the number one defense, but from the eyeball test, they've got the number one defense in the NFL.
So get this. Remember when Brock Osweiler got his start with the Broncos? It was because the Chiefs just obliterated Peyton Manning in that game. And so it was a Sunday afternoon. They kill Peyton Manning. He throws about 17 interceptions. His arm is falling off. And they go to Brock Osweiler at halftime. And so he gets his start as a starter thanks to the Chiefs. Then we fast forward 2 years almost exactly. And here he is getting a chance again. I've been saying it for a long time, Steve. And I have heard some people on the other end of this argument saying that Trevor Siemian, just give him some time. He's not a bad quarterback. He is not a starting quarterback in the NFL for a contending team. Now, he could go be the starting quarterback for the 49ers instead of Jimmy Garoppolo. He could go be in Cleveland. He could go.
Well, he was in Cleveland. He could even start for Cleveland.
Yeah.
And they're a minor league team.
Well, I was talking about Trevor Siemian.
I'm talking about Alabama could beat Cleveland. You know, but anyway.
Trevor Siemian could be on some of those worst teams.
Yeah.
But to be on a team like the Broncos that has such a good defense, he just does not give them enough opportunities offensively.
Yeah, he doesn't. He made just some terrible throws against the Chiefs. And, again, I thought Denver's game plan was all wrong. Should have just ran the ball about 55 times a game. Use that Bill Snyder approach. Throw it about 10 or 12 times. Trust your offensive line and defense and try to win games that way.
I said it at the beginning of the year that the Chiefs are still the team to beat in the AFC West, and I heard some people go, what about those Broncos? And I said, well, until they figure out that quarterback situation, they will be not good. And now they have finally made the decision to go to Brock Osweiler. And
is that kind of like raising the white flag?
I mean, Brock Osweiler had some good games with Denver in that second half of the season when they won the Super Bowl. It will always be on my mind that if it wasn't for Brock Osweiler, the Broncos might not win the Super Bowl that year.
Well,
and all the credit goes to Peyton Manning.
Oh yeah,
as he gets to sit back and say chicken parm. But he was so good.
But he wasn't even good in the Super. You know, they won the Super Bowl. And he wasn't very good.
He couldn't throw.
Yeah,
he couldn't throw that year.
Yeah, their defense.
And they won the Super Bowl.
Yeah, their defense won it for him.
It makes me furious. And finally, before we move on and take a break and talk about something else, we're trying to figure out what on earth is happening with Ezekiel Elliott as the Chiefs take on the Cowboys on Sunday. He has appealed the injunction for the appeal, for the suspension.
He's
going to
play. He's going to play.
They're going to make a decision on Friday.
That's my gut feeling is he's going to play. I mean, there's going to be lawsuits and stays and injunctions and petticoat junctions and you name it. Junction City. Yeah, I don't know. The guy just needs to do his six games, come back, he'll be fresh in December, and, but boy, it'd be a lot easier for the Chiefs on Sunday if Ezekiel Elliott isn't playing.
Let's talk a little bit about the Bullpups matchup with Bueller after the break, and then we'll dive into more of the World Series talk for Game 7 tonight in Chavez Ravine. He's Steve Sell, I'm Jim Joyner, and this is According to Jim on 96.7 FM, KPBE.
You're listening to the According to Jim with Jim Joyner podcast. According to Jim with Jim Joyner was brought to you by Overhead Door Company of North Central Kansas, Mead Liquor, Great Plains Federal Credit Union, and Four Seasons Realtors. You can also listen live Monday through Friday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 96.7 FM KBBE or online at midkansasonline.com.
Back in on According to Jim on a Wednesday afternoon. Jim Joyner, Steve Sell. You're on 96.7 FM KBBE or online at midkansasonline.com. Well, we've already heard my story and my horror story and disappointment about Halloween and no trick-or-treaters coming to my door last night. I'm still upset about it. And now, before we transition into talking about Bullpup football taking on Bueller on Friday night at home, we have a little correction to make.
Oh, yeah. Obviously, I'm showing my age. My dementia is set in. So, boys soccer, I was told, went to state in 2012-2013. Lost, of course, Miege. I mean, Miege wins everything, it seems like. So, 1,001 apologies to all the soccer fans and Bullpup sports fans that I may have offended. Again, brain cramp. When you get as old as I am, I can't even remember where my house is sometimes. So, you know, I need a little help. But anyway, Bullpups did go state soccer Final Four 2012-2013, lost to Miege. So, hey, I'm glad they're back.
Yeah.
I really am, because I just think what a wonderful feat. Because you got to remember, soccer is a lot more prevalent in the big cities. A lot of them play a year round up there in the Wichita area, in the Kansas City area. You know, we're just out here, little you know, McPherson, we don't have the big fancy soccer centers like they have in Kansas City. So we want to make that correction. And again, one of our fans listen to the broadcast. That's great. I know Putin listens in Russia on the,
mid-Kansas.
Yeah, I keep hearing Putin listens in Russia. But anyway, we got to make that correction.
I know that Bishop Miege won the state title in 2012. I don't know who they played, but I know they won that year because there was a guy that I went to high school with and ended up going to Baker with, who transferred to Miege to play soccer, and I know that they won the state title.
Did he transfer
fall.
Or was he recruited?
He transferred.
Okay.
Yeah, and then ended up at Baker as well. So
okay.
I crossed paths with him in a lot of different ways. I didn't know that many people that went to Miege before I got to college, but while I was at Baker, I went to school with a ton of people that went to Miege and played football and were on some of those really good teams, and of course, they've won three in a row at the 4A1 level. Let's hope that they don't make it four in a row as we talk about the Bullpups beginning their road to a state title game. Of course, they have the start of this road with the Buehler Crusaders on Friday night, a matchup of 8-1 versus 7-2. And I saw some people making some comments over the weekend that were saying, well, the playoff road is hard, but you have to beat the best to be the best. And I believe in that philosophy a little bit. And at some point, you have to beat the best to be the best. But in the first round, wouldn't you rather play a team that you get an easier look at?
Circle?
Where May South gets to play Wellington.
Yeah.
In the first game of the playoffs. And, of course, May South is a good team, and they could win a state championship. But when it comes down to it, yeah, you want to end up beating the best, but you want to beat them later on down the road. You want to have an easier road to get there.
Well, and if this thing was seeded like it's going to be next year, we would not be having this matchup.
No.
And
we play Rose Hill.
This is one of the reasons why they've changed the format for next year, to avoid games like McPherson against Buehler in the first round, because somebody really good is going to be sitting out in the first round, and then there's going to be somebody not very good, probably on the other side of the state, that's going to be moving on to the second round when they have no business, when they couldn't beat probably four teams in the West.
And that's what's tough about this playoff format, and of course this is just the way it's been for a while, and I was thinking about it the other day, Steve, that I forgot that district play, at least at 6A, was a little different. I don't know if this was the case at 4A, but when I was in high school, the point differential wasn't 21, it was 13.
Exactly.
And what they did that I thought was a little bit different from what they do now, where it's just they match up districts 1 through 8, 7, winner of 7 plays the runner-up of 8, runner-up of 7 plays the winner of 8, and so on. What they did back then is they still divided it into four districts on each half of the state, but what they did is they would take the winner of every district and make them a 1-4 seed based off of who had the best record. So if you were 8-1 and you won your district, then you get to be the number one seed likely. And if you are 2-7 and you win your district because you get lucky, then you're probably the 4 seed. And so it matched up a little differently than it does now, because now with McPherson matched up with the Andale-Buehler district, you're going to play a really good team in the second game or in the first game, regardless.
Well,
because one of them has to lose.
Yeah, McPherson's going to have to. If McPherson's to make it to the state championship game, they're going to beat three teams that have been in the top five this year. And that is, to me, that's a gauntlet. You look on the other side, I mean, Miege, they can have a cup of coffee and eat a sandwich for three games. They're not going to have to play anybody except Little Sisters of the Poor. So, you know, they're going to stroll into the championship game, whereas, you know, the West has had all but one of the best teams in 4A this year.
If I remember right, I think Miege will play Baser Linwood to open up the season, and they haven't been as good this year as they were last year, but last year, Baser Linwood was undefeated going into the state semifinal against Miege, but the way the district worked out this year, they lost to Tonganoxie, and so they were the district runner-up. And that matchup, if I remember right, was like 55-0.
Yeah, I was going to say it was
52.
I was going to say it was bad. It was probably running clock bad. So
there are some good teams over on the east side at 4A1, and I've covered them for the last few years, where DeSoto is on the ups right now, and of course they lost to Miege, I believe, 31-0. But that's the closest that really any 4A team has been to touching the Stags, and so it's just not fair when it's that team above everybody else that Miege gets to go run it against the EKL and Mill Valley, who is the defending 5A state champion.
Right.
They destroyed Blue Valley in the first game of the season, who was the defending 6A runner-up. They are just so talented. But the focus, of course, for the Bullpups is not Miege at this point. It's knocking out the Crusaders. And I was thinking about it in my head last night, Steve. And the magic number to me is 21. Because in my head, I don't think there's any way that Buehler scores 21 points. Now, I don't know if McPherson will score 21, but I don't think Buehler will score 21 points. They might score 14, they might score 17, they might score 20. But I don't think they score 21 points against this defense, which they did in the first game. I don't think that happens again.
Well, this defense, you know, they just haven't been tested. They have not been tested the last seven games, and it may be a little shock to them early in the game because they're going to be facing athletes now, the caliber they haven't been facing for the last 7 weeks. Let's face it, the last seven games for the Bullpups were nothing more than, you know, just to get some work in. The first two games of the season were just tremendous. The last seven, and this is nothing against the Bullpups. It's just the opponents haven't been very good. I mean, you can just look at them. The eyeball test will tell you that. But McPherson's been really, really good in all those games. And it's going to be interesting. You know, at least Buehler played Andale in week seven. And, of course, their schedule has not been very difficult either, other than their loss to Andale. So you're right, 21 points. I think if the Bullpups get to 21, they can win the game. It's a little colder. You know, you're going to have to – we saw it the other night, the passing game for the Bullpups wasn't quite as sharp as it was when it was warmer. But it's tougher to throw a cold ball. It's tougher to catch a cold ball. So the Bullpups, it's going to be up to the running game, I think, with Jace Kinnaman, Austin Hunt, Kyler Hoppus on the zone reads. They've got to be able to run the football. They cannot have another game where all they do is pass, because the first game the Bullpups played against Buehler, they only ran for 20 yards. They basically just threw it because Buehler just would not get out of that defense and just basically let us throw the ball all night. I mean, they just, you know, stacked the running game. I obviously think that Buehler will have a different game plan. They're going to play us straight up this time. There's no doubt in my mind.
I have one more point to make before we talk a little bit more about the World Series and Game 7 coming up tonight. And that point is this, and it's something that I'll talk about a couple of times during the week, and I'm sure that you'll know this stat by heart by the time we kick off. So in the first quarter and in the third quarter, Buehler this year defensively has not given up 1 point the whole year in the first quarter or the third quarter, because they play almost everybody both ways, and when they can come out and be fresh at the start of the game and after the halftime break, they are so good defensively because they're fresh. They haven't had to go out on offense for several drives, but in the second quarter and in the fourth quarter, that is where the Buehler Crusaders will be vulnerable. And to me, to have a chance to win, number one, McPherson has to either strike against them in the first and the third quarter, or they have to win the second and fourth quarter. Because if you let them stay in this game, it's going to be trouble because they have so many weapons on offense. But if you keep this game close, and one thing that I know for sure is that McPherson is a more conditioned team because they don't play everybody both ways. That if you get into the fourth quarter and this is a close game, there's one team that's going to be well conditioned, and there's one team that's going to be tired. Now, I don't know if the tired team won't be able to score, and I don't know if the well-conditioned team is going to win. But one team doesn't have to play everybody both ways. And in the fourth quarter, if this game is close, I think the well-conditioned team wins.
Yeah, and the other key, I think, to the game is Dalton Brown. He had 49 yards on 18 carries the first time. He's got 1,500 yards, whatever, on the year. Can we possibly bottle him up two games in a row? I mean, he is such an outstanding back. He's going to be first-team All-State, probably an All-11. You know, just he's got the pedigree, almost 2,000 yards last year. And really, if Buehler would happen to go to the state championship game, he's going to have that again this year. So, Bullpups, you know that they're going to be gunning for Dylan Brown. The other thing, when we played him the first time, what did I remember? We had like 11 plays where we held Buehler to negative yards.
Yeah.
And you know that's probably not going to happen again.
We'll talk a little bit more about the Bullpups and the Crusaders tomorrow, as it's our Bullpup football preview Thursday. Coming up after the break, we get ready for Game 7 of the World Series tonight between the Dodgers and the Astros in the City of Angels. We're back on According to Jim after this on 96.7 FM KBBE.
You're listening to the According to Jim with Jim Joyner podcast. According to Jim with Jim Joyner was brought to you by Overhead Door Company of North Central Kansas, Mead Liquor, Great Plains Federal Credit Union, and Four Seasons Realtors. You can also listen live Monday through Friday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 96.7 FM KBBE or online at midkansasonline.com.
final segment on today's According to Jim on 96.7 FM, KBBE, ahead of the final game of tonight's World Series and the final day of the baseball season in 2017. Steve, the Dodgers and the Astros, Game 7, doesn't get any better than this. When it comes to Game 7s, there's always something special about it, and there's always something that happens in a Game 7. And of course, Game 7 of the World Series last year was phenomenal. We have had some really fun Game 7s. Of course, a very sad Game 7 a couple of years ago that I don't want to talk about, with a man by the name that rhymes with Pattison Pumgarner. I don't like to say his name. It's kind of like the Beetlejuice thing. I don't like to talk about him. But when it comes to Game 7s, this is a chance for another exciting game. This series has been so good, and I can't imagine this game not being good again.
Well, if you go to midkansasonline.com and check out Sell on Sports Day, I talk about this very headline. And I always say in Game 7, it's the unsung player that you least expect could come up with the big play. Like, it could be Chase Utley for the Dodgers coming off the bench. Francisco Liriano coming out of the bullpen. I didn't even know he was still on the roster until last night.
You remember
night.
When he was so good when he was with the Twins?
He was always good against the Royals. The Royals could never beat him.
And
the Cardinals could never beat him when he was at Pittsburgh. Yeah. He just owned the Cardinals. And I always said, I wish they would have gotten him about 5 years ago, because I thought he was really good. But anyway, getting back to the game tonight, the home team always has the advantage. You know, they get the last at bat. It's always hard to get those final three outs. And like you said, this has just been an amazing World Series. Tons of home runs, tons of slick baseballs that pitchers are throwing back, because they say the baseball's all messed up. But I'll be very disappointed if this is like a 10-1 game or 8-2 or something like that. I'm fully expecting the total height of drama that we haven't seen yet. We have seen incredible drama, but these teams have a chance to take it up a notch tonight. And I still look for it to go right down to the end. And I still like the Dodgers somehow. Don't ask me why. I guess just because they're home.
You mentioned that the home team has had the advantage. Well, that hasn't been the case in the last two Game 7s, when the Giants came into Kauffman Stadium in 2014 and Mr. Pattison Pumgarner beat the Royals in the seventh game. And then last year, the Cubs won on the road at Cleveland in the seventh game. So two World Series in back-to-back years that have gone to seven games, the first time in almost 15 years that that's happened. But the road team has kind of had the advantage,
yeah,
which is weird. You wouldn't think that.
Yeah, and I think if this game was in Houston, I'd have no doubt Houston would win. But I just don't think the Los Angeles crowd, the wine and cheese crowd, you know, they're just not very intense. You got that heavy air, you know, all the yelling
smog.
Yeah, people wearing goggles because the smog's so bad at the games. But
so get this, Steve. I was looking up some ticket prices for tonight, and I want to throw this question out to you. What is the maximum amount of money that you would spend for one playoff ticket? Let's say it's your favorite team, the Cardinals, in the biggest game they've ever played in, a Game 7. What is the maximum amount of money that you would spend?
Well, the best seat in the house is right there in front of my TV set. So I guess maybe I'm an old guy now, and I don't like to travel and stay up. I get a chill at night.
That's
so
true.
Yeah, you know, I get a chill. So anyway, I just like watching it on TV. I don't have to be there in person. Okay. Now, bullpup football or bullpup soccer, I want to be there.
You want to spend that $6 to get
that's
in the
game? That's right. Well, I don't have to, you know.
You're a legend. They go, hey, well, Steve, come on in.
But anyway, I'm just not high on paying a bunch of money to watch something I can watch on TV. That's just me.
Well, I'm going
to
make you
maybe
sick
it's
then.
Just, maybe it's just because I've covered over 1,000 games in my lifetime. I've covered tons and tons of state championship games in my lifetime. Seen almost every Wall of Famer there is, you know, and McPherson.
Especially when you look in the mirror.
Yeah, well, anyway, but I'm just one of those people comfortable sitting in front of the TV set and watching it.
Okay, so here are some numbers that might make you a little sick. So I found the cheapest ticket on StubHub to get into the game, $893. Behind home plate in the upper deck, $1,600. $1,000 down the line in the lower bowl, but in the top half of the lower bowl. $1,200 down the line in the lower bowl, down by the foul pole. $3,000 for a seat behind the Astros dugout. $3,500 for a seat behind the Dodgers dugout. And $10,000 for those really close seats right behind
home
plate.
Well, you know, when I went and saw the Royals and Yankees in 1969, I think I paid $550. Well, I didn't pay. My parents did. But $550 for a box seat, and we thought that was outrageous.
As in $5.50?
$5.50, yes.
That's a hefty cost.
And Mel Stidlemyer threw me a baseball, and it clanked off my hands, went back on the field, and he had to pick it up and hand it to me again because I was a 10-year-old kid, and I yelled, "Hey, Stidlemyer, throw me that ball." And he threw it to me, and I clanked it. I was a gold glover in Independence Little League Baseball that year.
You can never make fun of Demetrius Harris on the Chiefs again for dropping a pass now. Yeah. Now that I hear that story.
Well, he threw a slider. So,
that's true. Yeah. That makes it a little tough. Yeah. Okay, before we get out of here, prediction for tonight. Who's going to be the World Series champion?
I'm going Dodgers. Home team. I'm a big believer in the home team.
I'm going with the Dodgers.
Okay.
I think that they finally win it for Tommy Lasorda. They win one for Vin Scully. The Dodgers are going to be your 2017 World Series champions, but this has been a fun season, and it comes down to the final 9 innings, or maybe some more. For Steve Sell, I'm Jim Joyner. This has been According to Jim, and we will see you tomorrow.
According to Jim with Jim Joyner was brought to you by Overhead Door Company of North Central Kansas, Meade's Liquor, Great Plains Federal Credit Union, and Four Seasons Realtors. Make sure to listen to According to Jim every weekday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. right here on 96.7 FM KBBE.